What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 52 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V, and joining me today are three awesome arena players. I figured we'd do an arena episode because we haven't done one in a while. Why not do one after just post BlizzCon and now that an expansion's coming out, right? I want to welcome Crip, Merps, and hopefully Ratsmith soon to the show. What's up, guys? How's everybody doing?
Good. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, should be pretty fun. there's a lot to talk about.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
We got some interesting things in terms of arena. It seems like League of Explorers is more of an arena expansion than it is a constructed one. So that should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I figured we'd kick off things by just talking a little bit about BlizzCon, and you know, they made the big announcement there. Obviously, we were all expecting a new dungeon actually for the adventure mode, but they surprised us actually with League of Explorers, which is actually in World of Warcraft, but I don't know if it's not kind of pseudo in the lore. Right? I don't actually know the lore very well. Actually, Crip, you might know better.
Okay, so there's like these little dwarf dudes, and among them is Bronn, which we're seeing a card of.
Yeah,
and
right.
They just show up in random places and like, hey, what's up? We just explored this place. Welcome to our place now. Right. And that happened in Wrath of the Lich King. It happened in Classic. And I think it may have happened a third time in a later expansion.
And that's the extent of all the characters that are in?
Oh, I'm sure there's much more.
Yeah,
but
I think
as far as like a typical World of Warcraft gamer, that's as much as most people know.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely
this
surprising.
This is out of my league.
Yeah, I mean, me
sure.
too. I mean, I played vanilla. I didn't play it much more than, like, I played vanilla for a couple of years, but I didn't play more than that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of people aren't familiar with the lore behind League of Explorers. So it was kind of surprising they chose it, but at the same time, I think the theme is very fun. And it kind of leads down the path of just what they've done with the adventures. Crip, did you get a chance to play it at BlizzCon?
No, I didn't have time to play it. I tried to play it on like the day before BlizzCon, and like as I was walking there, I had Blizzard employees running after me, and I'm not joking.
Okay. I had a chance to play a little bit of it. I probably shouldn't spoil too much for you guys, but I can tell you that the actual play mode, I mean, when you're actually playing, you know, each of the I guess dungeons, they're not really dungeons in this one, so, but each one of them is very, very different. In fact, it's a lot more fun, in my opinion, than the previous two. So, yeah, you guys should look forward to that. It actually launches in a few hours here, so should be live, and we'll have to talk about it, I think, once it comes out, too. Also, at BlizzCon, we had the World Championships, which, Crip, you had the pleasure of casting. And what'd you think of the whole event?
Yeah, it was really good. I think we highlighted some very high-level play. I think nobody was disappointed with the winner, and sometimes they are in tournament-level play because mm-hmm. the RNG can sometimes dominate the more prepared player, let's say. Mm-hmm. And also, I think we got to highlight that, you know, it's something we often talk about, but because Hearthstone has such a large random element, it's not really validated in many cases. But it has to do with tournament play is not ladder play, you know. So if you play ladder, you're playing against like three decks the whole time. If you're playing tournament, you're playing against like many different varied versions of those decks on top of counter, along with like aligned setups to beat a particular deck. So mm-hmm. it's a very different game that I think more people should be open into looking at.
Yeah, I thought the semifinals were actually, Murph, you were watching from home.
I was watching. Yeah. I thought overall it was just really good. You know, as someone, I like to think of myself as a hardcore Hearthstone arena player, but, you know, Constructed, I'm as casual as you can get, you know.
Right.
I thought it was well run, and I thought it was just, bottom line, it was entertaining. And, yeah, the semifinals between Osaka and Tides, that was crazy. You know, I kind of partitioned an hour to watch that semifinals and it went like 3 hours, but I loved every second of it. It was just really cool, and it kind of opened my eyes to this constructed world, which, you know, I never play, but I thought, you know, the strategies were interesting. You could tell the players who were there belong there. You know, next level plays, just like lots of thought put into it. And good personalities, kind of good storylines as well. I kind of like the infomercials that they ran about everyone in the middle. So well run, entertaining. It was good stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely probably one of the smoothest Hearthstone productions I've seen ever, actually. So kudos to the ESL team and Milk. I think I'm not sure a lot of people know that Milk's running a lot of this stuff behind the scenes these days, Milkcast. But yeah, the semifinals. I think the semifinals between Tyson. So you allocated an hour. I allocated 2 hours because I had an interview with the dev team like in 2 hours. So I'm like, okay, I can at least catch this one, right? And I didn't even catch the very, very end of the game five. So that was kind of a bummer. But the game itself, though, is one of those few matches I think where the community's. It's been a while since we've seen a match where we can actually say that, oh my God, that this is definitely high, like another level of play. It's been definitely a long time where we could actually just pinpoint that. And that game, that Freeze Mage game was definitely one of those games that we can see the just how good they are, especially at playing Freeze Mage. Both of those guys are two of the best players at that deck. So that was definitely great to see. But overall, yeah, Osaka ended up winning. So world champion 2015. Hopefully he gets a huge boost. I mean, Scott has been very good for a long time now, so really, really great to see him get to celebrate it.
Absolutely.
All right, so
Definitely.
we're done with the news now. Let's get into the cards. I think this is what everybody's been really waiting for, is having us discuss some of the cards. And I figured the best way to do it is to have each of these guys really list out the five most relevant cards that they think is in the set right now pertaining to Arena. So why don't we take a look at that real quick here.
Can you?
And
I don't know how you have it set up, but can we maybe go over the cards that we have in common to see if
sure.
we have like different opinions on them first, and then we'll like
Yeah,
move
I think
to
that'd
the
be a great
differences?
idea.
Yeah, definitely sounds good. Let me here we go. All right, so I got it up on stream right now.
All right, let's take a look at these.
Yeah, so the two that you have in common are the Fierce Monkey
I think that was
and
pretty obvious. I don't think there's really much to talk about that.
and the Ethereal Conjurer.
There's probably a lot to talk about that.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
was actually surprised. I was like, wow, that's cool that you guys.
I'm glad Crip picked this one as well. I think we would get some pushback by some people, but I think our thought process is very similar here. A lot of people bulk at the three health, and typically you don't want your five drop to have three health. But is Azure Drake a good card? Azure Drake is a really good card, and that's basically the same, not the same stat distribution, but like it's a pretty good stat distribution when you compare it to Azure Drake, and you're drawing a card, and you're drawing a better card. Mages have pretty damn, like, they have good spells. And when you draw a card, especially if a card puts you a little bit behind, you want it to be a spell. Like, spells basically are charge minions. Yeah, it's a weird way to think about it, but some spells are charge minions. So you want that instead of a minion that you just plop down and that are open to counterplay.
I think the card is like ridiculously powerful if you're running like a tempo mage and you're ahead a little bit. Because if you're ahead, the three health really doesn't matter, because they would have used your removal to stop you from being ahead on an earlier creature than a five drop. So it's just like five drop threatening six damage, which is a lot for a five drop. So the stats actually don't even matter if you're playing a tempo mage or a mage in a tempo style that game. And as you talked about, discovering a spell, because it's only limited to the class, so you're getting a mage spell guaranteed. There are no neutral spells. That's better than a card draw. But one thing you kind of left out is like the mage spells that are considered bad aren't actually bad. They're just like far more situational. But that aspect is actually really relevant here because you don't have to pick that. But it sometimes will give you that option. Like sometimes, like if you play this on like turn seven, you might actually really need like an Arcane Missile or Arcane Explosion. And you don't want that card in your deck. But if you can get it off of this, it can actually win you the game in a lot of cases. So.
So that brings up a new mechanic that we see in League of Explorers, the Discover. What do you guys think of that
I
mechanic?
think it's like perfect for Arena.
Yeah, I
I think
think
it's
so
so
too.
good.
I think so too.
We talk about good RNG versus bad RNG. This is good RNG. Like bad RNG is something like Ram Wrangler, where you don't have control over it, and then you kind of just, the swing is just huge either way. Discover, it's a way for you to introduce some RNG into the game, but the It's not as expansive. It's limited within your class. And it's kind of a skillful way to implement RNG as well, because you still have to pick the card. So I think this is the direction that Blizzard should go in terms of RNG.
And it's also like Discover limits you on the limitation on the card. Like for instance, the Conjurer has the spell limitation. It has the class limitation, of course, but it doesn't have the rarity limitation. So it also allows you to kind of push for like legendary minions and epic minions, which often will win a game by themselves, which you otherwise would not have readily access to drafting a deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about some of the cards that you do have different, just differing here. So Mounted Raptor, or it's Mounted Raptor, right?
All right,
It's, yeah,
so
Mounted Raptor.
I'll
So,
like preach the case, and then Merps can either refute my claim
that sounds good. Got
or
it.
be converted.
Be converted. Actually,
Sounds
Mounted
good,
Raptor
man.
was on his list at one point, so this one's probably going to be easy for your
Okay,
grip.
so I think the Raptor is pretty simple. You have to keep in mind the rarity scenario. We learned that class cards show up twice as often as neutral cards, and cards in the last expansion, at least for TGT, showed up 25% more. And they also mentioned that they might alter this percentage, so it might actually be more than 25% because it's a smaller expansion block. But it also diminishes the TGT set. So the TGT set loses its 25% bonus. So that's also kind of relevant. And with these things in mind, you're going to see a lot of the common cards in League of Explorers in your arena run. And I think Mounted Raptor is just premium three drop, and the consistency is going to be extremely high. And I feel like Druid's a class that you kind of expect to lose in the early game, and Mounted Raptor just kind of takes a lot of tempo. Sometimes a 3-2 won't be very good on turn three, but in terms of a tempo play, it's a very good one, because even if you get a one health, one drop, you're taking two mana from your opponent, and if you're trading for a two drop, you still net one mana on that. And it's a beast, which increases the consistency of your beast synergistic cards. And that's another aspect that's really important. You're going to have a high frequency access to a beast, and suddenly your beast synergistic cards are much better than they were before.
I think your analysis is spot on. I don't think Raptor is a bad card, and like Chan Man said, that was like really close on my list as well. I think Harvest Golem is a good comparison, and also Druids, every expansion for Druids, I mean this one not so much, but like TGT was ridiculous in giving them early game, right? Like they've been getting good early game every single expansion, and back in Classic they were this slow plodding, like the Ironbark Protector class, and now they have like Living Roots, Darnassus, Druid of the Saber, all these good low drops as well, and this just adds to it, which added beast synergies as well is good. I just didn't put it on the list because I don't think it I don't think it advances Druids in a way that is, that advances it more than other cards advance other classes. I do think it's very good though.
Well, to I want to dispute that a little bit. I mean, every single card you just mentioned was in TGT, which you're going to see that occurrence bonus removed. So all those
Yes,
cards that
that's
helped
right.
Druid so much are no longer going to help Druid as much. But because they have this, it kind of, stabilizes that situation.
Sure, yeah. No, I definitely agree with that, but I think right now they actually have an overabundance of good low drops that diminishing, like taking away the 25%, won't hurt them that much because on top of those, you have Anodized Robocub, right? And then you have, they have lots of good, consistent, and even more importantly, synergistic small drops. Like the ones I've listed are either beasts or it's a mech, which is awesome. It's just really good in the arena to get that extra synergy.
Okay, well, Murphs, let's talk about the card that you did replace, actually Mounted Raptor with, which was Pit Snake, rogue card. And for those of you listening to it, I should probably talk about it. So it's a one drop, 2/1 beast, destroy any minion damaged by this minion.
Yeah, so I ultimately picked Pit Snake. I just think it's tough when you say top five in terms of most relevant. I think because Rogue is, to me, and Crip, you can dispute this, I think Rogue is on top of the arena right now. I think it's the number one class. And Pit Snake is just, it puts so much pressure and it helps Rogue down this path that they love to walk down, which is tempo, different sorts of pressure, and swing turns. And this also, you know, puts pressure in terms of if they're not a ping class, it gets a little bit dicey if the rogue has the board. And rogue has many ways to get the board initiative. And if they're a ping class, then, you know, lots of times you don't mind them pinging with two mana just on your one drop that you can probably activate a combo off of as well. So you get that mana advantage, you put on the pressure, and a lot of times this dinky little one mana card can have a huge effect on the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just think the case, like, okay, you look at that card and you look at, like, Leprechaun. If it's a back and forth game, it's literally worse than Leprechaun. It's really only good when you're, like, crushing your opponent. So he can't deal with this and he can't play, like, his five drop on turn five to try to come back, right? That's when it's really good. And I feel like if you're in that case, you're probably just going to win the game as a rogue anyway. So I think it's a good card, but I don't think it really advances Rogue much more than its current position.
Yeah, and I think this is just, it helps Rogue with what they're good at. I do agree it doesn't exactly advance, and this is why I was like kind of tossing and turning between the Raptor and this one. I think it's pretty close in terms of my top five, because I don't think it, you know, it gives them anything that they don't already have. It helps them walk down this path, and it helps them compensate for the lack of the 25% offering rate. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I think it's pretty good. I think it actually didn't make my top 10 list, but it's maybe 11.
I think these are really close. Like, I was looking at some cards. I was like, yeah, I mean, if you want to say like number 3 or number 4 on my list versus even like number 12, I'm like,
yeah, pretty similar still. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk Raven Idol. So this is a one. I guess it's a spell, right? So it's a one mana spell or item, whatever. Choose one, discover a minion, or discover a spell. So multiple layers of decisions here.
I'll straight up just say it. I think this is probably the best card for Arena out of the whole set.
Wow. All right.
Define best.
That's bold.
It'll win you the most games out of all these cards, I think. Okay, so if you're playing Druid, you have this in your opening hand, and you don't get a 2-drop, there's a very good chance you get a 2-drop. In terms of creatures, okay? So it helps you fix the curve in a way that it doesn't actually punish your tempo, which is really important because there's just not that many one drops in Arena.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to finish off your opponent, if you look at the Druid spells, almost all of them do damage or draw cards, so you could draw into damage. that's the idea. So if you're in that situation where it's like, oh man, I'm 4 off lethal, you just use this card, and there's extremely good chance that you'll get that damage that you need. And this is where I talked about how Discover is really powerful because it crosses the rarity boundary. Mm-hmm. But like you have to think about it. Like, it's not exactly like Unstable Portal, because Unstable Portal you get like the discount back. But I feel like Druid is pretty good at like stabilizing a bit with its high power early minions and very strong taunts in the late game, where the mana difference isn't as important as it is to actually get a very heavy card. So if you Unstable Portal 3 times, you're going to get like a ridiculous card in terms of a minion. You're going to get like, I don't know, you might not get Sylvanas, but you'll get like a Boulder Fist. So if you're paying one more mana for minion like that, usually doesn't matter, which means that you basically substitute a Boulder Fist Ogre for a Raven Idol. So it curves out your deck so hard and gives you like extreme flexibility. I think what it does is just insane. I think because of this card, Druid's probably the best class out of this expansion.
Mm. Wow. Right. You mean resulting from the expansion, or you mean from the standpoint of improvement from this expansion?
I think both.
Wow. Okay. Right. Merps?
Yeah, I think All right. In terms of like selling me on Raven Idol, I think you've sold me a little bit on it. I think it's definitely good. And an interesting point about Raven Idol is it's more similar to tracking than discover mechanic.
Yeah.
Because if you think about tracking, and part of the reason why like tracking is good is because you have two filters, right? Your first filter is actually during the draft, because when you pick the cards from tracking, you're picking three cards out of the three cards that you have already picked. So, you know, while there's no like curve consideration in tracking, you have that quality filter. Discover doesn't have that initial quality filter. This, it's almost like tracking, but a separate kind of filter. You're filtering either a minion or a spell. So by having a double filter, you tend to get the more appropriate card. You tend to get the better card for the situation. So that is really good. The reason I didn't put it on my list was just because it offers something that druids really don't need, once again, which is flexibility. Like, druids have always been very flexible. Their weaknesses are sort of, you know, they're not the fastest class, and it changes a little bit now with mulch and recycle, but they never had hard removal, so they had to play a very honest style of play. They can't like cheat by using like a hex, you know, something like that, and this doesn't really help them with that. It just makes them even more flexible, which is good, but I thought kind of the impact was not as high. You definitely sold me a little bit on it. I like that.
I think the discover mechanic actually weeds out more common, rare, and epic cards than it does legendaries, because each class has 3 legendaries, but there's like 60 neutral legendaries. So if you use this for minion, I think like 1 in 8 cards are going to be legendaries. And if you roll that 3 times, that's like half the time you use this, you're going to get a legendary minion, right? Like, that's insane for Arena, even if you have to pay 1 more mana. Like, a legendary is usually over budgeted. So, like, the 1 more mana doesn't even matter a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's good. And once again, it goes back to kind of like, you have to get the legendary. The legendary has to be good. But the most important factor is you have to make it to the legendary, because the small legendaries basically are all pretty terrible. It's really
not
like.
Not that many of them, though. There's really not that many.
There's not that many, yeah. But it's usually like the one legendaries that are good are usually like the heavy hitters, you know, your Dr. Booms, your Kel'Thuzads, you know, your Rags and all that stuff. So you still have to make it to that turn. And in a lot of times in the arena, and I think you said this before, you know, you carve out a small advantage in the early game, and then that advantage just multiplies every turn. And then even when you get to play your Ragnaros, the game's already over by that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Merps, your next card on the list is a Paladin card, Keeper of the Uldemon. It's a 4-drop, 3/4 body, Battlecry, set a minion's attack and health to 3. So it really puts him in range of just being able to kill him with the Keeper, right?
I think this is a really powerful card because it gives Paladins something that they couldn't do before, which is basically it's a big removal. It's not a pure removal, but it equalizes. So this thing is over costed by 1, right? It's over costed by 1, but the flexibility is huge. So on turn 6, you could, you know, if you got no other play, you just hero power, do this. It's a 3/4 and a 3/3 for 6 mana. That's pretty good. And if you're behind on the board, which is a scenario where Paladins sort of really struggle, like if they just drop a Boulder Fist Ogre and you're like, well, you know, I have all these buffs in my hands, I need to just grab a small board advantage and then suddenly I can buff. This is what gets you back. So it's good when you're ahead, it's good when you're behind, and it offers this pseudo outdoor peacekeeper effect. It's not as good as an outdoor peacekeeper, but it offers a sort of outdoor peacekeeper effect as a common card, which I think is really good for Paladins.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think I overlooked this card a little bit. It is really good in all those cases. I think the one thing that really held me back is it's a card that can actually be really bad. Like, it's not always good if you're behind. It's good if you're behind in, like, the mid to late game. But if you're behind and this is your only 4-drop and you're facing, like, scrubs everywhere, sucks to play this, right? So it's a card that isn't really that great to play on turn 4. But one thing that we've seen throughout the expansion is there's all these cards that are, like, 1, 2, 3, 4 mana that actually substitute for like 6 and 7 drops. You know, they kind of take them on. And this has that quality. So I think I did overlook it a little bit. It's just, I think you have to play it that way. Like, if you're curving out your deck with this in mind as a 4-drop, you're probably curving too slow.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of, you can make sort of a similar argument with like Murloc Knight, right? It's a 4 that's not actually a 4, unless you know you have a clear board on turn 4, you drop it, and then you kind of hope and cross your fingers that they don't have 4 damage. So it's similar to that. It has that Murloc Knight, Cavalier Raider sort of, you know, understated, but if it just survives for a turn, it's good. It has that situationalness to it. But I think overall, the effect is just really powerful.
Yep.
Yep, agreed. Okay, Crypt, Priest card, 2-drop, 1/2, Museum Curator, Battlecry Discover, a Death Rattle card.
All right, I'll just say it again. When I first saw this card, I thought it was a joke. Thought like 2 mana, 1/2, like what is this? You know, this is not the game we're playing these days. At least it should have been a 2/1. Well, it would have been much better as a 2/1. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because it would take on a high number of 2-drops at least. So it makes it so if you play this card on turn 2, it's actually kind of crappy. But it's another card that you actually have to research the Death Rattle list. And, you know, after I originally reviewed this card badly, as I mentioned in my first card review, one of the comments on Reddit was like, you know, you should just look at the Death Rattles to see if this card's really not that bad at all. So he posted a list of them, and they're like, wow, these cards are absolutely crazy. Most of the Death Rattle minions are, like, insane in the early game or catch you up. You know, you have, like, this guy, if you play him on turn 2, you're going to be in a losing situation. But, like, almost all the Death Rattle cards in the early game are okay in a losing situation. That's kind of what they're good at. So it's okay as a desperate play on turn 2, more so than it seems. That's my point. But then when you, like, scroll up, like, half the cards on that list are legendary. Like, the cards are insane.
Yeah.
There's like Sylvanas, a piloted Sky Golem. There's Major Domo, which is pretty bad.
Cairn.
Cairn. Like, all the high-power Death Rattle cards, even the mid-power Death Rattle cards, are just crazy. So, again, I think this is a card that substitutes for, like, a 6-drop. But because Priest is so terrible if you miss your early game drops, that it kind of bridges the gap. It's just like Murloc Knight, as we talked about, with even keeping it Ulduma, which is it's a heavy drop in an early game body, and I think that really helps Priest stay consistent. So I think that's why it's very important for the class.
No, that's really good. So I didn't go through the list of Death Rattles, although thinking about it now, just going through in my head, yeah, I can see how a lot of them are really good. One of the reasons I dismissed this card is not so much the problem with this card itself, it's the main problem with the Priest class and why, like, so if you go all the way back to Classic, you know, I mean, Paladin was still pretty good, but, like, Paladins and Priest both had this problem where if they got on the board, they were really good, you know, they were dominant, but they both had this issue where neither one of them had good tools to get on the board. And, you know, Paladins had great turn 4 plays, but it had really, you know, crummy early plays. So, and then you see the kind of separation throughout all these expansions. Paladin has gotten, like, you know, shielded minibots, musters, and that allows them to not just, like, take advantage of having the board, but get the board, like, just really stick onto the board. Priests have never had that. This expansion doesn't help it at all. And, you know, Crypt, you use kind of the term, like, desperation play on 2, and then you can grab something of value, like, of pretty good value, but Priests still suffer from the same problem. And I think it's a problem that you really see in this expansion, like, Entomb, good card on paper, yeah. In a vacuum, yeah. But that doesn't help the Priest at all. They need a muster, you
it's,
know?
It's still like a mind control, I feel, Entomb.
Right.
Exactly, yep.
But I think this does help that a little bit. Like, if you're making your draft, you know you're playing Priest, you know you need, like, 3 Boulder Fists in your deck. You just play this instead of it. It just increases the consistency of your deck. It doesn't do it very well, but it's still increase. Like, you would rather have this than a Boulder Fist.
Yeah, so, yeah,
I think
definitely.
It's pretty good on that note.
All right, Merps, your last one, 7-drop, 7/7 body, Obsidian Destroyer. At the end of the turn, summon a 1/1 Scarab with Taunt.
All right, so to be perfectly transparent and honest, I don't think it should have made the top 5 in terms of impact, but I did want to talk about this card, you know, in terms of impact. And look, if you look at all the other cards, there's a reason that, with the exception of, like, Ethereal Conjurer, and you know, that's, we explained why we put that on there. Like, there's a reason that impact-wise, like, 1, 2, 3 drops are going to have more impact than a 7-drop, even though it is, and I think Cripple even admit that, it's pretty good, right? It's at least pretty good.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about it just in terms of, like, I think this does help Warrior in quite a few ways. So number one, just, you know, power creep versus War Golem, right? This is just, like, much better. And War Golem is, like, you know, it's an average card, average below average card in the arena. The
what
one,
about
one
Cabal Shadow Priest? Not power creep.
There you go. Yeah. Thanks. Or MC Tech. You played this right into MC Tech, right? Your favorite card of all time.
Yep.
But I think that getting the 1-1 with taunt is just really good. Because number one, if it that 1-1 provides sort of a pseudo ping for a non-ping class if it survives. If it doesn't survive, they either have to run something into it, which kind of changes the board state, or they have to hero power it down, in which case you're essentially getting a 5-mana 7/7, which is ridiculous. And more so, just talking about the warrior, this is a good step, but Fierce Monkey, I don't think there'll be any disagreement. Like, Fierce Monkey will determine games more often than Obsidian Destroyer.
Yeah,
You know,
100%.
just because of the mana cost. But I think this is good, and it gives Warriors kind of this late game option to go with this early game. And you know, we can also talk about the new weapon they got. I forgot exactly what it was, the 1-mana 2/3 weapon,
The
but
curse, yeah, the curse.
yeah, like if you look at all these together, it's going in a good step. I don't think the Cursed Blade is a good card by any
Nobody
means,
does.
No.
You're safe.
No. Yeah.
But you know, like, look, it'll get used in the arena, right? Basically, a lot of
Maybe.
decent to bad cards will get used in the arena. But I think this is a decent step, and that's why I thought, you know, it deserves a mention, because you could see them making an attempt, and this will definitely get played. And do I think Warriors like got a lot better? No. Do I even think that they are not like the worst class? I still think they're the worst class, but hey, we're heading somewhere, so there you go.
I actually
Really?
think depending on how much they skew the currency bonuses, like if they make I don't know, Explorer cards 50% more likely rather than 25%, I think Warriors would actually be like a class. It would be a debate whether they're not maybe the worst class.
Sure, yeah. I could get behind that. I could get behind that, yeah.
Yeah. As far as the card, I think one aspect that it does very well, I mean, everything you said is totally right. I think it's above the power level of most big minions, so it's really good that Warrior gets it, because if Warrior wants, it can. You can usually push to a late game strategy as Warrior
Yeah,
at a
you
costly amount of hero powers and tempo, but you can usually do that. So it's okay. It's just Warrior doesn't have too many comeback mechanics at that stage in the game. So even if you play as, you'd still probably lose. But one thing that Warriors do have often, going into like turn 5, 6, maybe 7, you'd have a weapon up. That's usually when you play one, because like all weapons are playable on like 5 or 6. Not in terms of mana cost alone, but in terms of like an opening in your mana.
Yeah.
I feel it's like a card that in a specific board case would allow you to actually push for a face condition. Because like even though, like, yeah, it's like a 1/1 taunt, it can be pinged or whatever. But if your opponent doesn't have a ping, it might just stop like his 7/7 from attacking you, which means you get 7 face damage, right?
Yeah.
So it's a card that has this like a little bit extra potential to allow you to close out the game, which is something Warriors actually really do need.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think that in terms of winning strategies in the arena, when you play Warrior, you have to play it, I think, a bit more aggressively than a lot of people might like. And it's different because in Constructed, you know, you see Warriors like just armor, 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 and that is, you know, that leads to a winning strategy. And in the arena, you actually have to play, you know, tempo really aggressive because, if you look at every single turn, your lack of a ping, the kind of the fact that your cards are not as good, the fact that your hero power just is trash, that will really show in the span of 15 turns, in the span of 20 turns. So you really have to push it a little bit, end the game by like turn 8 or turn 9. And I agree, that's definitely like anything that allows you to do that, which to me feels kind of like the winning strategy with Warrior these days, like that's good. It's helpful.
All right,
All right.
well, Rathman's not here with his five, but I figured we still got some time. So why don't we talk about some of the cards that were, you know, really close to making the list? Maybe another two or three that you guys have. Are they all common cards for you guys? I mean, common
Yes,
cards are all.
in my top 10, I have no rare cards.
Yeah, we could kind of take a small tangent. I think if, you know, tossing out rarity, I think another cool card, and I think one that could be pretty powerful is the other raptor, the Unearthed Raptor. The 3-mana, 3/4 for rogue, that is, you basically get to copy Death Rattle effect. like talking about cards with upside, any card with upside and no downside, that's amazing. You know, this is a spider tank. You don't have the mech synergy, but you know, how often are you gonna pull off mech synergies in the arena? And you have this crazy
It's
good,
nice.
yeah. you have this crazy good upside. You know, if you do have a death rattle, it's pretty good. Turn two, Haunted Creeper, turn three, this, not bad.
Yeah, very true.
Just to name a few cards that I thought were just pretty good. I thought Forgotten Torch was pretty good just because removal is so premium in Arena. I think you mostly just play it 3 mana for 3 damage and never draw the fireball. I think that's what you can expect out of the card. But removal is so premium that that is still pretty good.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And the fact that it's 3 mana for 3 damage, which let's face it, kind of stinks, is more okay for a mage. Like mage is one of those classes that can slow the game down a little bit, play for value, just remove, and then once you do draw the Roaring Torch, it's a better fireball, and fireball is a top card in the arena. So you know, you just find a turn in which you need that initiative. You know, you need the Wolf Rider, basically. You play your Wolf Rider, and then you put a super premium card into your deck. And as the mage, you know, you can feel confident that with a lot of drafts, you can make it there, wherever that card is in your deck.
Do you have another one?
Yeah, so I was also looking at this card. When we went through this card last week, I know a lot of people disagreed. I want your take on it. What do you think of Ancient Shade? It's another rare card. 4 mana, seven, four. You shuffle Ancient Curse.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty good for Constructed. I think in Arena, because it's a rare and because it doesn't do anything too spectacular, I think it doesn't have a consistent enough spot in any given deck. Very few decks actually push for face damage, and it's still just 4 health. So if you're not winning, it just gets killed by something else. I don't know. I'm not too crazy about it for Arena. I think I'm more crazy about it for Constructed, but I'm still not.
So my initial thought looking at this was just let's compare it to the Lost Tall Strider, right? Which is pretty average card in the arena. And then the big question becomes, so this obviously has a bad effect. At any moment you could take 7 damage to your face, which is not good. Games are determined sometimes by 1 or 2 damage, so 7 damage is a lot. But my initial reaction was, well, it's turn four. When is the seven attack actually going to matter? But we've ha actually had an influx of two sixes, like quite a few two sixes, and just these annoying, you know, you're going to see Maiden of the Lakes, you're going to see Frigid Snowbolds. Sometimes you'll see the turtle as well, but it actually can matter. And the fact that I'm also assuming that the Ancient Curse, when you draw it, you're going to draw another card. Like it would be terrible if, that would be a terrible condition. Just take 7 damage, you don't draw a card. But I think this is actually going to be a decent card, and we had quite a lot of pushback, but I think it's kind of a toss-up for me. You're never going to see these side to side because one is rare and one is common, but if I saw a Lost Tall Strider with this, I'm like, I'm not sure. It depends on the deck.
Well, it's a rare, so you're not going to see that.
Yeah, yep, true.
But my counter argument is that you're right. Like, people are playing two sixes and stuff like that. But the reason they're playing two sixes is because people are playing high attack, high impact, early game drops. And this would just die to those.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of cyclical, right? Like what happens? You see, you know, you react, and then there's going to be the counterplay, the counter draft to that. So I think that's pretty interesting. And then look, there's also some cards that I see it, and from an arena perspective, I'm just like, this is just trolled and waiting to happen, you know?
Well, there's a lot of those cards.
You play like 3 of these and then you die and you have lethal on the board.
Yeah, definitely. Like anything can happen. The basically all these Murloc cards, and whoever gets the golden monkey, you know.
But those aren't
Oh,
as viable in
nobody's getting the
arena.
golden monkey in Arena, dude.
That's not gonna happen. I mean, even anything can happen isn't gonna happen that much in arena, right? Like just a boatload of Murlocs.
But what, where are you on the card now? Are you still, it's like maybe okay? Are you still there?
Huh?
On the
Like what?
an ancient shade. I'm still thinking it's terrible. I think it's pretty
I don't
terrible.
think it's terrible, and that's the reason I brought it up. I wanted your opinion on it because I don't think it's. I think my opinion is probably higher than what most people would have it as, and I could definitely be wrong, you know. And like you said, it for the current meta, I think it's okay, but who knows where it'll go? Yeah.
So
All right.
what do you guys think of Dark Peddler? Because we didn't talk about any Warlock cards here.
There's a reason to that. They're mostly not good. I think Dark Peddler is horrible for Constructed because it doesn't do enough. Constructed is more about tempo.
Sure.
But in Arena, you can kind of slide on tempo a little bit. Dark Peddler is the 2-mana 2/2 that discovers a 1-cost card.
Yes, that's right.
So 1-cost cards include all the 1-drop creatures, and some of those are actually pretty good, especially if you have a range of 3. You can usually pick a pretty decent one, like a Flame Imp, a Zombie Chow. Maybe if you're not playing against the pink class, just a 2/1 is pretty decent. So it's not bad. Ultimately, I kind of rank this on a similar power level to Razorfin Hunter, which is not a terrible card, but
Yeah.
yeah. So it's like a 2-drop or a 3-drop. Every now and then you're gonna get like Soulfire and be really happy, maybe Immortal Coil and be pretty happy. But I just don't think it's high enough impact. I think it's basically on the power level of most cards, so I don't think it really advances Warlock in any way.
Yeah, I think Razorfin Hunter is a pretty good comparison. Warlocks do have a few good one mana spells. Like if you get a Mortal Coil, that's really good. Mortal Coil is just a huge winning card in the arena. Flame Imp, obviously, you know, most of the time you're pretty happy to see that. And everything else, yeah, most of the time you're just gonna get the Razorfin Hunter, but you get the flexibility of you can either play it that turn, or you can just, you know, if you only have 2 mana to squeeze out, right? So it has the additional flexibility because the Razorfin Hunter is a clunkier 3 mana, and sometimes you can't really fit that in. So I think it's decent. You know, I think it's kind of like average, maybe, you know, like a little bit above average for arena card. And it also fits into the way the Warlock plays as well. Yeah, it's definitely not premium. And look, I know nothing about Constructed, so I'll just agree that there's no place for it in Constructed.
Nah, I don't think so. I'll throw one on my list that I actually thought was pretty good, that I even thought about in the top 5. But we talked about the cards that had high impact. There's also no surprise that they're all class-based because that doubles the occurrence.
Yes.
So a neutral card would have to be spectacular to make that list. And none of the neutral cards are spectacular, but I thought if this was a class card, it may have made one of the lists. So it's just something to think about. And it's an interesting dynamic. It is Tomb Spider. It's
Tomb
the 4-mana
Spider.
3/3 that discovers a beast.
Oh, yeah.
And what's really interesting is that particularly hunters and to a lesser degree druids have some pretty gnarly beasts that you can discover.
Yeah.
I also feel the card in general is on a similar level to Gnomish Engineer or Gnomish Inventor, which is actually pretty good. Which is not a bad card. On turn 4, I think you'd want a 3/3 over a 2/4 a lot of the time. But it's mostly that Tomb Spider does two things. You have the desperate turn 4 play. You have like the 10 mana play. You slam down Tomb Spider and try to curve out as best as possible with a beast from it. But if you're playing like Hunter, you know, there's really still not that many beasts. You know, you got Hymane. You got Gazrilla, you got King Crush, you got Myxna, you got The Beast. You know, the amount of like
That's
high impact cards that you get from this, especially for Hunter, is like totally insane.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that Hunter actually needs. They need to like curve out in the late game to like actually be able sustain themselves a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think this would be a very impactful card if we were just saying like what are some really good cards for druids or hunters. But yeah, I think the reason you're correct. The reason it didn't make our list was just because if you look at classes that are gonna play this card that are outside of druid and hunter, beasts are not that good. Like neutral beasts are not that good, and those two classes have synergies with beasts. Be neutral beasts synerging with new sin I don't I don't know if there are synergies with neutral beasts. I can't really think of one right now. But even if there are, it's not strong. It's just not strong at all. So the drop-off is huge if you're like using it as a druid and hunter versus like anyone else. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Reno Jackson comes up on one of your choices. You picking him?
Never.
No.
Okay. Never. It would have to be.
Like, I don't know about never.
I mean, like, Arena's going to have the most likely chance.
Generally, no.
Arena will have the best chance of having just singletons, right? A deck full of singletons.
Yeah, but if you play Control Warrior, that's just a card you play when you're in fatigue, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to see more constructive play than it's going to see Arena for sure.
Yeah.
Which seems weird because most people say what you just said, right? In the Arena, like, oh, you know, it's just kind of a hodgepodge of cards. You're just going to get one ofs most of the time. But in the Arena, this card works well if the rest of your deck revolves around this card, right? In Constructed, it's kind of like you take a few cards or you take this one idea and you mold all the rest of the cards around either this idea or these few cards. In the Arena, like, do you mold things around Reno Jackson? It's such a, like, the body is terrible. You have to assume that you're pretty much behind to get value out of it, and that's a terrible assumption. It's like, well, I'm going to be losing anyways. Might as well just pick Reno Jackson.
Well, that's the other thing. It often gaining even like 27 health against the mage, you still lose.
It doesn't matter.
The same way.
Yeah.
Like the issue is that in Arena you don't have burst combos and you don't have like combo win conditions. So it's just more important to tempo out and grind your opponent's health down.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we haven't talked about this yet, but Crip, I'd like to know. So who do you think are the overall winners
and
losers?
Yeah, I was going
to
bring that up too.
The winners of what?
Winners and losers of basically this adventure mode. Like the new cards, like which classes are the winners, which classes are the losers?
I think actually Paladin's the loser because they got so much in TGT and that has a rarity bonus and that's going away. And I don't think they're getting really that much out of this set. Some of the other classes literally just get nothing. So there's a lot of losers, I guess. But I think that affects the Paladin the most out of all the classes, the fact that the TGT rarity bonus is likely going away. I think the big winner is Druid. And Warrior, but Warrior still has a long way to go. I think Mage got some pretty nice cards, and it's already near the top. So, I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to say Druid is big winner, Paladin is loser.
Right, Merps?
Totally disagree on Paladin.
Okay.
I know what you mean. I think if you look at it in terms of like basically cutting down the odds of them getting Murloc Knight and Seal of Champions, which just feel unfair sometimes, right? Like these are just ridiculously good cards. That will hurt them. But I think that because this expansion doesn't advance, like, you know, there's no like extreme power cards in this expansion. The fact that Paladins get like a pretty good card, and I think Keeper is a top tier pick. Like for me, Keeper of Old Man is a top tier pick. So just getting a top tier pick and riding on the kind of power that you already had, I think that's pretty good. I don't think they're the winner by far, you know, of this expansion, but I definitely don't think they're the loser. The loser, I would say, is Priest, just because of the reasons I talked about. Like I would have loved for them to get an actual early gameplay and they didn't get anything. You know, like they basically got a buffed up novice engineer, and it's a great novice
it's
engineer.
Like half a thing. yeah
it's half a thing, but it's something you can play in the early game. But like you play a 1-2 on turn two, you've lost the board guaranteed against everything, right?
No, it's so, I think it's mostly a counter against the one drop.
Yeah,
right. It's not it's nothing.
It's just, not nothing. No, no,
it's usually bad.
Yeah, usually bad. And then they got things like they got Entomb, and they have what was that AoE that
it's the excavated evil.
Very forgettable.
and then you give that card to your opponent.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
pretty terrible.
With excavated evil, at least, all right, like Crip, how many times have you played around Holy Nova and left like your entire board at 3 health? Like we've all done that before, and I guess this you can, you know, punish that. But excavated evil, I mean, it's it's another slow card, right? It's a more expensive Hellfire, and Hellfire even a lot of times is just too slow.
Well,
So
I
I
think
think,
like the good part of the card is if you're playing an aggro deck and they actually draw it, they're gonna lose. But that aspect is gone in Arena. There almost are no aggro decks at all in Arena. So yeah, there is no advantage to this card at all.
So I think that's why I think the priests kind of lost overall. Like they got heavier and they got more value, and they don't need anything that gives them more value. Like if they make it to the late game, their hero power is amazing. They have so many ridiculously good cards that synergize with them having the board that they're not losing the late game. Mind Control, Temple Enforcer, and I just wanted them to get one early game card that mattered, and they didn't get it. So that's why I think they're the losers.
Yeah,
Okay,
the
well, in
Oh, go ahead.
terms of a comparison, just to compare your loser and my loser, I think Paladin is in a worse off position than in TGT. I think Priest is a slightly better position than in TGT. So, I mean, like, when I say Paladin's a loser, I'm not saying Paladin's the worst class in Arena. It's probably, like, third or best
It's
after this.
relative, yeah.
But,
Just
like, the amount of drop compared to other classes, I think, I kind of stand behind my decision. And I kind of disagree a little bit. I think Priests, even though they got more late game, it's still pretty good late game. Like, Entomb is on the same power level as
it
six
is.
drops. It's on the same power level as Mind Control, actually. And Museum Curator helps that a little bit. So, I mean, you basically got more consistent late game, which kind of means that if you adjust your drafting to just almost exclusively early game, maybe that in itself actually makes the Priest class better.
And we'll have to see, right? This is us talking from talking from our armchairs, and
We'll see
I tend
soon.
to get some things right in these predictions and get a lot of things wrong as well. And that's kind of the excitement. Like if you know what's going to happen, then why are you freaking playing this game in the first place? But no, I'm really looking forward to it. And I think that what we said at the very beginning is correct. This is very arena centric, and you can take that two ways. You can, number one, say that it's just not a very good expansion because it's not very constructed relevant. But I thought they put in a lot of interesting cards as well. They a lot of these kind of not only just introduce a new mechanic, but kind of make you think about the class a little bit differently, give a class a different tool, or they advance. They out of all the kind of boundaries that this class has, it pushes them in a little bit different direction, just a tiny bit, which I think is really appropriate. That's what every expansion should do.
Yeah, and they were the definitely Discover mechanic is way better than what we saw with Inspire and Joust last, just last expansion, right? So I think they've done a really good job actually with such a small set of cards. I think we're gonna see some changes, and that's all we've been really, really wanting.
There's
Overall,
also
oh, go ahead, Blake, go
the
ahead.
unknown factor of how they're going to adjust the frequency, because that also plays a really big role.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're operating under the assumption that they're just going to transfer the 25% rate to the new expansion. And if they're not, if it's anything other than that, like our analysis today, like Crypt's picks, my picks, and what we've been saying, it's going to be off. And it could be off by a decent amount because that's huge. That's significant. Not only are we assuming that they're offering these at a higher rate, like, this is the reason why you say Paladins are the losers, right? Because we're assuming they're not going to have all these Murloc Knights and Sealed Champions, which are just two of the best, not even best class cards, two of the best arena cards, period.
Well, I am curious to hear your winner, Merps. I mean, I kind of vouched for Druid pretty big. I think one aspect I didn't even talk about is just the fact that there is a disproportionately high number of beasts introduced in this expansion. So it enables some of the more mediocre Druid cards to have an increase in power level, on top of them receiving what I think are some of the best cards in the set.
Yeah, I think winners, Druid is pretty close to the top, just in terms of kind of this consistency, the power that they also get. I would actually put the overall winner, and not really because of card quality, but just kind of because of their current strength and the fact that I don't think they're really going to slip. I would put Rogue as the overall winner, because I think not slipping in this expansion is winning almost. But I think they got cards that really helped them play the style that they want to play. You know, I think in some expansions, Blizzard either helps out a class, like, you know, gives them good cards, but good cards that don't really fit the play style. I think that Rogue got some pretty good cards, maybe not the top cards, but they got some pretty good cards that help them in the manner that they want to play, which is tempo, you know, with the Pit Snake, the rare card with the Raptor. That's just good value. You know, you're never really disappointed with a Spider Tank. And yeah, I just think that, like, they're still able to play this game. Like, Tomb Pillager, it's just a, it's a lost Toss Strider, but when it dies, it adds a coin into your hand. Now, you know, you can kind of say that when it dies, the earliest it can die is like turn five, and the coin doesn't matter that much, but you always want a coin, you know, you always want a combo activator as a rogue. So I think I would pick the winner, not because I think these cards are the best in the expansion, but I think that Rogue did not take a step back. And I think they even, I don't think they took a step forward, because Undercity Valiant and Buccaneer are ridiculous. So, but I don't think they took a step back, which I think is good enough for me to proclaim them as the winner.
Yeah, I think there's a very real chance they will be on top at the end. But, I mean, I looked at this winner and loser idea as who gains the most ground and who loses the most ground. So I can't really disagree with your assessment on that. I just think we kind of answered slightly different questions.
We did, yeah. It's really tough when you're talking about, especially like top five cards. I'm like, what do you mean top five cards? And then overall winner and loser. Yeah, like if we were to just saying like overall winners and losers in terms of card quality, I think the priest cards are good, you know? Like, the priest cards are really good. It's just when you inject it into reality and how the classes actually play out. But I think, you know, some things we definitely agree on. And I think you've sold me more on kind of not only Druid, but the Druid cards today as well. Like, Raven Idol, I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, that's it's pretty good. And it just, it also adds this flexibility that the Druids never needed, because they were pretty much the most flexible class in the arena. But it's really good. You know, one mana, you can always squeeze out that one mana. It's, you know, same thing for tracking as well. And if you, just by being able to choose a spell or a minion, like, that's that double filter we were talking about as well. So I really like Druids. I'm looking forward to that in the new expansion.
So overall for you guys, like, with just looking at the whole set here, do you guys think that Arena was represented well here by the design team, or like a little bit more than the past expansions, or do you think it's about the same, like percentage wise?
I think Arena was represented more than Constructed, actually.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah,
I think there are no cards in Constructed where you look at this card, it's like, I'm putting that in my deck. It's like, I'm maybe trying to make a deck around this card. You know, there's always that wild factor.
Entomb's pretty good, man, right? I mean,
it's not a... I mean... okay, I mean...
Constructed? Are you talking about Constructed? No?
It's great versus Control Warrior, but first there has to be a lot of Control Warriors.
Yeah, still, it's... Okay, sure.
Yeah, and look, this is my perspective from someone who never plays Constructed. I never thought, you know, even in Constructed, Priests had a problem with removal, right? I thought the problem with Priests and Constructed was they were too reactive of a class, you know? So for other other decks, like, that also required setups, like, they could just set up on the Priest, and the Priest kind of had to, really just respond. And that's super dangerous against a lot of classes.
Yeah. It just seems like... It's much easier to balance Arena, so I think they just at least had that at the back of their mind. Like, if the rare cards had a common rarity, almost all of them wouldn't even make any difference, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
In terms of rarity, the cards are really well balanced, and that's an aspect that almost has no drawback to balance. It just seems like they took Arena into account for this expansion, and that actually balances it more than Constructed. I think that's Arena needs so little for it to work.
Well, you could also tell that they thought about the Arena just from the Warrior cards, right? These are two premium Arena cards that will never see the light of day. Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know Constructed, but I don't think they're going to make it into Constructed decks.
For sure,
and
they won't make it into Constructed.
I think the monkey
and the bolster thing might be kind of interesting. But
yeah, because it's basically, like you don't see Senjin in Constructed really, but this is like a better, you're just missing one stat point from Senjin, and it's a pretty good card. But you could tell that they tried to think about the arena based on rarity, like Kurt talked about, and making these bad classes, especially the worst class right now, and giving them a couple of good tools, one for early game, one for late game. So I think that's really good. I'm really excited about this. And there's fun legendaries here as well, but once again, this is
Just don't
Arena.
matter.
We're yeah.
Yeah. Warriors need love too, right? That's the movement's actually working.
Yeah. And then also there will be those moments where we all like I'm not familiar with the new cards, and I'm going to play into that like paladin secret that basically it's like the delayed
Don't
MC
even.
tech that just kills off one of your opponent like one of your minions. And I look forward to all of this. But I think it's basically just good to move on. Not saying I'm tired of TGT, but like so Crip, like what have you thought about the TGT meta as a whole?
I feel like they introduced so many cards on the same power level that like almost all the decks are about the same. So if you're not playing an extravagant tempo deck, a lot of your results are up to RNG effects.
I think it was like a pretty healthy meta though, like not in terms, we can always complain about the number of paladins, right? Like the number of paladins or like the kind of power difference between the top classes and the haves and the have-nots. But I thought it was really good. It wasn't like in GVG where I think you miss that one mana on one turn and you're absolutely dead. I think there was like some good variety as well, and it was just, I think TGT like really brought in a lot of fun and a lot of strategy, and it slowed down the game a little bit, and it introduced kind of these, it purposefully slowed the game down by dropping these kind of big cards, but good cards like Kvaldir Raider, and then it also slowed the game down by incentivizing you to use these Inspire mechanics. So you didn't feel the need to kind of, and it made it harder for you to create these like rush down aggro decks. So everyone was just trying to like see who curved out better and then just won. So I thought the meta was really healthy, and I like the direction that this expansion is taking it, where you have some interesting cards, interesting mechanics. I don't think any class kind of like pulled away, and then now we just get to see how these cards like mesh with the old cards.
Yeah.
Should be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how they're going to balance the occurrence of the cards. That's really the big thing. I really think there's a real chance that it's going to be something other than 25%. I think there's a good chance it'll be as high as like 50 or even higher. And I
Wow.
think that might be like really exciting, because if it is like 50, you look at the cards and it just seems like everything's in perfect balance. Like warriors aren't even the worst class if it's like 50. I'm gonna go on the record with that.
Wow.
Wow,
I think like
okay.
Shaman is below warrior if they do like 50% bonus
Yeah.
for expansion cards.
I have to say, I think Shaman right now, for me, I think
That's
Shaman is the second worst class. So I
yeah.
totally understand what you're saying. Shaman's just, and we can talk about that because I think it's going to be an issue really soon. Shaman's, it's obviously a problem in Constructed, and it saw some play during the World Championships. But like you said, the tournament scene is nothing like the ladder scene. I think Shamans are just, every single expansion that's come out, it hasn't given them any consistency. So in the arena, you have RNG with your cards, you have RNG with the draft. Like, if you look at a draft, the difference between a deck with a Flametongue Totem versus a deck without a Flametongue Totem is huge. And that's just, one of the cards. You do 3 damage on a Crackle, you lose the game right there. And you do 7 damage when you just like don't need that damage as well. So you have the RNG in the draft, you have RNG in your cards. Overload is just in the end, Arena is about board control and board initiative, but that comes from tempo. So if you can't tempo, and if you can't tempo because Overload is a little bit too expensive, then you're going to lose. So just all these problems. And who knows, maybe in a few months we'll be saying, they got to fix Shaman. Arena Shaman's batter.
No, they
Batter.
got a long way to sink, but maybe.
Yep.
All right, guys. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. Crip's gotta go here, so I will, any shout outs, Crip. Thanks for coming on the show, of course. I always love having you on these arena episodes. But yeah, any last words?
Nope. It was a lot of fun to finally have a talk with Merps, talk some arena, learned a few things. I think the biggest thing you swayed me on was the Paladin card, and hopefully the education was a little bit mutual.
It
But
went both
lots of
ways,
fun.
dude.
All right, well, thanks for having me,
Yep.
and see you guys in the next one.
All right. See you, Chris.
See you, Crip. All right, guys, we're going to go to a quick break. And just a reminder, guys, we have a Patreon set up for Valuetown. It's the best way to support the show, patreon.com/Valuetown. And we'll be right back, guys. And wow, Ratsma looks like very, very different all of a sudden. Now we have Edwakta joining us in place of Ratsma here. I'm going to fix the overlay in just one second, but for the time being, he's sitting in the Ratsma spot. Yeah, I figured I'd bring.
I figure I'd save you guys from just listening to Merps talk for the next like half hour.
What's wrong with that,
Harsh,
man?
man.
What's wrong with
Harsh.
that?
I got some knowledge I want to, toss out here. I'm ready for these questions.
All right, let's see what we got. Guys, for those of you that want to ask your questions, go ahead and tweet it to @ChamanV, or you can post it in the comments here, which most people have been doing right here. And first question is from Bart Zaro. Is Murph's strategy to being the number one arena deity buying out his opponents, bringing down the win rate of streamers he co-ops with by misplaying, or are the chinchillas giving him superpowers?
It's one, two, and three,
One, two.
honestly, and I will explain. So we Advocate and I have a great system where we paying lots and lots of opponents to toss games in the most epic way possible. So number one, we get the win, and number two, we get the YouTube highlight. So it's really good, and
Well worth the money. People are really cheap. They'll throw games for like very little money.
Yep.
Oh
And number
man,
two, that is our
esports with
strategy. So
esports.
if you see people who we do co-ops with, like I did a co-op with Hafu, and I used
Oh.
my account, and we went 12-0. And then we jumped over to her account, and she played Warrior. And then we started off like 1-2, and then I kind of just ditched it to go do something else. So yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to just sabotage other people.
That's harsh, man. That's harsh, but a good strategy
You
nonetheless.
gotta do what you gotta do to stay
Yeah.
on top.
That was Hafu's mistake. She was like, "Chat, why don't you pick the class?" Not knowing that it was our chat that was joining her
Paid every
chat.
single,
And
yeah,
so Warrior
exactly.
will always win.
Oh man. All right. So that question's from Bart Zaro. Next question. Artur B. Oh man. Kachenko. It seems like League of Explorers is addressing the issues we had from 3 to 5 months ago, where people were complaining about RNG a lot. Do you think this means it's likely our meta complaints from the past month? Wait, do you think it's likely our meta complaints from the past month will be addressed in the next expansion or potential balance patch, hopefully?
This seems like it's a constructed question,
Yeah.
because when you say meta, I'm assuming you mean kind of like the secret paladin, kind of scum that's going around.
Scum. Wow. Okay.
I will turn this into a arena question. That's just because I can't really talk about the constructed. But if you mean that concerns with the arena meta, as in a lot of people think that they see too many paladins, they see too many of those. I don't think that will ever change because I think in the arena, you're always going to have one class that is either a little bit more powerful or a lot more powerful. But even if it's just a little bit more powerful, people are still going to pick it. The vast majority of people, you want to win, so they're going to pick the winning class. So I don't know if that will ever be solved. I think they can address it in some ways to bring down the power level of, let's say, if you do believe that Paladin is ridiculously overpowered. I think they can do things to address it, but I think you're always going to have a big chunk of the arena meta be like one or two classes just because they're going to, rise a little bit or a lot above the others.
Yeah, and it's not just about which class is more powerful. It's about which class is more powerful and easy to play.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people can get 12 wins with a paladin one out of every 10 times. Less people can get 10 wins, 12 wins with mage like that. Even less people can get 12 wins with rogue like that. And so you see a lot of paladins when you get to especially the higher win rates for that exact for that reason. And in some ways, I think this meta in terms of the paladins is actually better than the previous meta, which is mage, because mage was not only the best class, it was also the best class and the easiest to play class that was good. And so I had this weird thing where everybody just played mage if you want to win, and every other class had like at least a little bit of a handicap. Here it's pretty balanced on the at the very top, right? Paladins are good for most people, but if you get like a real like expert in, they'll probably do just as well, probably better with like rogue and mage. I remember the last time I was on here with Hafu and Krip. We were asked like, what was the best? This is where a little bit after TGT comes out, and it was like, what's the best class in TGT? Hafu says Paladin, Krip says Mage, I say Rogue, right? Like that's pretty healthy for a meta when it comes to the top class.
In terms of constructed, I guess I can speak to a little bit about that. Issues of 3 to 5 months ago, 3 to 5 months ago, we were just complaining about Patron Warrior, right? So, we were seeing that we saw that
Oh no, they're
change.
gonna nerf frothing.
I know, exactly. Oh man, but in terms of complaining about RNG, the new mechanic is somewhat of an RNG thing, discover. It's just a like Murph was saying earlier. I think it's a better execution of an RNG type of play, where you actually give the players choices. Even though like the cards that show up do have some randomness to them, at least you give them choices, right? And it doesn't feel so bad when things happen. But I would say that a lot of these cards, even though they do help arena a lot, they feel more fun, right? Like all this golden monkey stuff,
Definitely.
and all these characters, and I would say if anything, they're going down the road of fun. I think it's a little bit more that way with this expand this adventurer, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It might be, it might be a little disappointing from the competitive standpoint, but I don't think it affects it that negatively at all. One of the cool things about the cards that are added, I feel like there are maybe a couple cards that people can, attempt to build decks around. Kind of similar to what we saw with Mysterious Challenger, right? We might see some people build stuff around Reno Jackson and cards like that. And that's all we're asking for. We just want to see new decks, guys. Like if we can, if there's still the old decks existent, that's fine. As long as we see maybe one or two new ones, I think that would be a success from the standpoint of a 45 card, expansion here.
Yeah, I think you'll see that.
Yeah.
I think there'll be at least one new deck that comes out by the end of all the releases, just because there are some pretty powerful or powerful in the right situation kind of cards that were in here. I think when Patron came out, no one was like, "Oh, this card's gonna ruin the meta." So I think there's a good chance there's a sneaky one in here.
I think the rogue cards in for constructed, I think, are particularly interesting, given that rogues basically had one play style for the majority of the last year. It's pretty much been oil rogue, and that's it. Maybe some fatigue rogues every once in a while, like Ryzen's playing a fatigue rogue here and there, a mill rogue here and there, but that's about it. So I'm really excited to at least see those cards in play. All right, next question here. We have, I find it interesting from Sean Holly. I find it interesting that Blizzard has decided to create new lore with the characters in League of Explorers while they have so much to draw from out of the WoW universe. I'm wondering what spells and or minions that are not currently in the game from WoW universe do people like Crypt and others want in Hearthstone? Well, that would have been good to ask Crypt that one, because I'm not sure how you if you guys are super knowledgeable about the lore.
I'm not super knowledgeable about the lore, but I'll just say that I kind of understand the direction that they're taking because if you look at so Hearthstone is just based on this kind of ridiculous premise, right? It's based on kind of this goofy, fun atmosphere, and Warcraft lore, there's many ways, they have inside jokes, and then it can be very funny, but it's very serious and it's a very lengthy history as well. And you're going to have this divergence, like this split sooner or later, where they're just going to have to create this very goofy lore and goofy stuff for Hearthstone because that's just the kind of game it is. It's this just card game that really pushes this sort of fun atmosphere. And I think that, it didn't have to have this separation at this expansion, but I'm not surprised that they took the route that they did.
Yeah, I think this expansion in many ways was like a testing ground because they've never done anything like this before. It It's off lore. It's kind of just the way the whole expansion is coming out. It's an adventure, but the adventure changes a lot of things around. It's not a straight up defeat the boss kind of adventure. And it also is very, like, it's pretty obvious this is not targeted at the constructed scene. It's more like, here are some cards we think you'll have fun with. You described it as casual, and I think that's right. And so, and casual and arena focused, because arena, everything's arena focused. You can't, no
Speaking of
matter what you do, it's
casuals in
good.
arena.
Yeah, arena's always going to be affected.
I'm just kidding.
So I think it's a giant test, and they'll see how well it does. And I hope it does well, because I think Hearthstone, with that kind of game and that kind of attitude, will benefit from a one serious, one not serious, or like two serious, one not serious kind of expansion thing.
Yeah, agreed. For again, like I got a chance to play, some just the new expansion, and you guys are going to be really, really happy about it. I mean, I've been waiting for them to really take advantage of the fact that this is a digital game and we can, really set up different play types and play scenarios. And we've seen it. We saw it with the previous tavern, right? With the two on one type of tavern. And then now we're seeing with PvE, and this is a real PvE like you guys will experience tomorrow, and that's really, really exciting. I think for Hearthstone, doesn't change the competitive scene again, but for the quality of the game, I think this is going to be really, really good. Nicolas Lerivere, oh God, I hope I pronounced that right. Do you think there is potential to have alternative deck building modes beyond the current arena system? After watching the Challenge Stone Finals at BlizzCon, I wondered if there was a place in Hearthstone for a rotating theme ladder, or is that something that's better left to one-off tournaments?
I think it's probably already in the works. I would be very surprised if it wasn't already in the works, and I mean more than just like an idea on the wall. I try to make predictions about what Blizzard's like doing. And I see how well they pan out, and they're actually I'm fairly on point generally, and I think it's already past the planning, like the on paper planning stages for this new mode that is going to come out either if you're optimistic about it, maybe even in the winter, but probably like more like next spring, towards the end of spring, early summer, like around where Brawl came out actually. I would expect that to be like a release date. It's just such a it's a space they're already exploring, like you said, like these kinds of new game format, a PvE kind of thing. And they just kind of said at BlizzCon that they were still looking into how to properly make a tournament mode, which tells me that tournament mode is not right around the corner. And what else are they doing with this game? That seems like the most logical place they would take the game that would get a lot of people, interested or to retain a lot of people who are playing.
They're working
Yeah,
on
I
deck
think if you.
slots, Eduard. That's what they're working on.
Oh, that's right. That
All right,
12-month process.
come on. All right, Murph, you're gonna say something?
Yeah, I think if you look at, because Hearthstone, it's what it's done so far, it's done pretty well, but there's so much space to expand. And I do expect some expansion in terms of, because the arena, nothing has been tinkered with, nothing has been touched there. And even from the beginning, it felt just like this. They obviously put thought into it, but there was so much room to expand there. And I think that if they don't do it anytime soon, it boggles the mind why they wouldn't. Because I think out of all of the, out of like casual ranked Tavern Brawl Arena, I think Arena is kind of due for, for them to grow into
Ramp, yeah,
this
vamp up.
expansive
Yeah,
space.
yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Marius Sterian asked, "Are you guys hyped that Ben Brode mentioned that they are working on letting you see your golden cards in Arena? Too bad Crypt isn't there to answer the question anymore." I guess Crypt might have mentioned something before. I usually don't play my golden cards, believe it or not, because I'm
What?
one of those people that are like, if I don't have all of them, like Raynad and I guess Crypt probably, I
Oh.
just it like bothers me not to have them all. Plus, it makes my list longer. You know what I mean? So. I'm real anal about the length of my list. What about you guys?
I would like it. It gives me something to play towards again, and I think some golden cards are just so cool looking. But this is me, right? I never see golden cards getting played, and when I so because I play Arena all the time, so when I watch a stream with an all golden deck, I'm like, that's what the golden card looks like.
Oh my God,
I'm
it's
seeing it
such
for
like
the
an out
first
of body
time.
experience. Like you see a golden card, you see the animation, and you're kind of like, I want to play that game. And then you're like, oh, but that's not the arena.
Yeah.
So I am it's going to be like a whole new game for me once
Yep.
whenever Ben Bro's idea gets implemented, however it gets implemented, that'll be my next goal, like immediately, and then I'll be a very happy person.
Yeah, you actually, you know what I'd like to see in the UI? I'd like the card backs to be more prominent. I think that's one thing that's
Yes.
lacking. I mean, they're trying to push like, oh, collect all these card backs. They're like so cool, and some of them are actually. I've been seeing some recently that are like, wow, that looks really sleek. But I see like half a card, you know, like from my opponent. Maybe I see a card rotating across the screen every once in a while. But looking my own card back, it's hard as crap to even see my own card back, and that's what's supposed to. The whole vanity aspect of it, right? That's supposed to be the cool part. So I would like to see them do something about that. That way people would actually, you know, I guess be more, you know, enthralled by the whole card back thing. Right now, I feel like people don't give a crap. Like,
Yeah,
should
and
be
I think
new
this.
animations that make the cards flip around on the board or something.
Yeah, or something like that, right? That would be cool.
If you look at successful models with like vanity items versus non-successful models, like successful models are like the skins in CS:GO and the skins in like League, right? And the part of the reason they're so successful is not only do you get to show off these things, you get to see it. And that goes to, you know, what we're talking about right now. It doesn't matter kind of like how exclusive it is. Like you want to see it. Like you want to see what the other person is seeing. And you don't get that with Hearthstone. You know, you get that little peek at your card back. And there are some cool card backs too, that, you know, that show you've gone to like, you know, some tournament.
They should
Go
add
on.
a new emote that makes you like shove one of your cards just like
Like
halfway across the board.
windmill style.
Yeah, just like, I'll get my card back, and then
Yeah.
pull it back. You know, maybe
Perfect.
have it on a slightly longer timer than the other emotes.
Like Ostaka in sorry, Oskaka in Firebat. They'd have like a badass world champion, you know, card back that they can just like shine in everybody's
Oh
face,
man.
right? I mean,
Yeah.
that should be amazing. It should be specifically designed for each one of them. That would be a really cool just a cool note for them.
That
All
would be
right. Oh gosh. Juane Diende, and username is the Twitter account. Is Fossilized Devilsaur a good arena card? Maybe not enough beasts in an average draft.
Oh, I
Isn't
really
that
like the card. Oh, so I'll say what the card is.
it's
It's an
a
8 mana
iron
8
bark.
8.
Isn't it like an
Yeah,
iron
it's an
bark?
8 mana 8 8 common neutral card, and it has a battle cry that says turn into an iron bark if you have a beast.
Yeah, right. Man.
So it's obviously not as good as an iron bark, and an iron bark is not the best card ever. And depending on what class you are, you probably don't have all that many beasts, and so it's not really going to get a taunt all that often. But it's an 8 mana 8/8. And I just like these cards because it's the arena. Like the common cards need to really fill up. It's like the what, the 6th, 7th expansion by now? I'm
Yeah.
not really counting. But
No,
it just
it's yeah.
confuses me that there's still not like a generic 6 mana 6/6 really, or like, you know, stuff like that. So I like that this is basically filling that slot. Like you have Draken and Crusher that kind of fills the 6 mana 6/6 slot, but now we're, and it's showing that Blizzard's exploring more of the space, right? It used to top out at 7 mana 7/7, and then there was a Force Tank Max, which is like an actual good card at 8. But now you get a neutral card at 8, and it's recognizing the 8 mana slot as like an exploration area of stuff may happen here, because things don't happen at 8 mana in arena right now.
Right. Like we have the dominant 9 mana play, which is Morsi Kraken, and it's pretty much an auto pick if you do get it. So you know what's happening on turn 9. On turn 8, it's, you know, Force Tank Max is not it's not a dominant pick. It's a above average pick, right? So what happens on there? It's like Oh gosh. So a lot of the times it's just like a 5 mana plus 3 mana card, and it gets a little bit messy. So this, as good of a card as it is, it's like meh, but it is like, it does something, right? It does something. It expands the kind of the territory of the arena.
Right, exactly. I'm trying to fix this thing on the fly here because
I was
Oh
wondering
no,
what
this
you
is
were.
wonderful. I
Yeah.
want to it's such an honor to be Crip for a few minutes.
Yeah, That's funny. All right, let's see if there we've got any more questions here. There we go. Those of you that want to ask questions, go ahead and tweet it to @ShamMV. Did Rasma die? No, he did not die. I think that's going to be it actually for the questions.
Sounds good.
So why don't we wrap up? Merps actually had walked it too. Thanks for dropping by, Merps. Obviously for the whole episode, it was great having you on for the first time.
Been
And
fun.
I think the discussion, with Crip, it was fantastic. So another arena episode under the belt and a successful one nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Really enjoy these kinds of arena episodes on Valley Town.
Yeah.
Yeah, we rarely did them back in the day.
Yeah.
I don't know why we rarely did them, but we did. Probably mostly because
Because
of
you were
me,
buying
because I just
in. You were
don't.
buying
I
into
just.
Blizzard's agenda.
It's mostly because probably I just don't play quite as much as Arena, but
Yeah.
I'm coming around, definitely coming around.
And I think most of like a lot of people are who were, for a long time, mostly or almost like very primarily Constructed players, just because the game's been around for a while. Even if you still love Constructed, like there's room to explore the other game modes more now.
Yeah,
Yep.
absolutely. I want to do some shout outs, Merps.
Yeah. So first of all, Chan Man, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun, and I look forward to, I'm always happy to talk about the arena. But if you guys are interested in more arena talk, Advocate and I host a podcast called The Light Forge. You could find it on iTunes right now. And this Sunday, we'll be having a new Light Forge with Crip. So if
The
you liked
extension. There
exactly
you
what
go.
happened
Yeah.
today, there will be more happening
But a lot
on
deeper.
Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
On Lightforge.
Yeah. And also, if you guys are just interested in arena plays, period, Adwokta and I also have a YouTube channel. It's just the channel's name is ADWCTA. And on there, we have our edited videos. And we have a lot of our 12 win videos as well. So you can kind of see our thought process, kind of see exactly how we play. And yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah,
Awesome.
I'm really excited about the Light Forge podcast with Crip on Sunday. And I was watching this earlier when Crip was here with Merps, and I was like, oh man, they're talking about so many of the same cards. Because we're doing week by week wing reviews right before the week.
Oh, you're right.
So like this weekend we're doing wing two, and like half of the good cards are apparently in wing two. This is
They
what I learned
are.
tonight.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna have like a lot of like the same discussion, but I will also give my take on it
Exactly.
and hopefully
Exactly.
mediate between the differences Crip and Rips has.
Oh, there's
And there'll be
plenty.
other stuff
Yeah,
too.
there's plenty to talk about that we didn't talk about tonight. So that should be a great episode. But again, I just want to thank you guys and Crip for coming on tonight. We'll have the VODs up on youtube.com/ChamMV right after the show. Again, we have a Patreon for Value Town. It's the best way to support the show and keep the show going. Patreon.com/ValueTown. For all the patrons that are currently supporting the show, I really, really appreciate you guys, and hopefully you're having some fun with some of the things available to the patrons. I want to have more things available, so guys, like I want you guys to give me feedback and things like that. Any ideas that you'd like to see me do with the ValueTown patrons? I'm down, I'm totally all for it. Starting next week, guys, we're gonna have call-ins from all of the viewers instead of just doing these Q&As where you send in stuff. I actually have a Discord channel set up, and we'll start taking calls from you guys. Can't wait for that. And you can also listen to Value Town as a podcast on iTunes, where it's available there, so you can check that out. Or there's a Feedburner a feed that you can just get directly if you don't use iTunes, got an Android user or something like that. And again, I'll post that on my website, chamanv.tv. I'll tweet it as well, so just keep an eye out for that. But you guys get ready for the expansion tomorrow. I'm excited for everybody to get a chance to get a hold of it and get the cards. I'm gonna be building decks right off the bat, or at least with some of the new cards. I hope I can build something with the new cards, because it's gonna be how many wings are there? They're four wings? Is that
Four.
There's
yeah?
four
There's four
wings.
wings.
I think there's a pause in Thanksgiving where we're like stuck on wing three for a bit before like the huge surprise that's wing four that no one knows what's going on with.
Right. So yeah, anyways, I can't wait for the community to actually get a chance to play Wing One. And I think that's probably what I played at BlizzCon, and it was a lot of fun. Okay, guys, that's going to be for Value Town 52, for Crip, Edwakta, Merps, and myself, ChamMV. We'll see you next time. Later.
See you guys.
See you.